Has anyone ever buried you in reasons for why abortion is justifiable? Let's talk about how we can respond. Come debrief with us. Hi, I'm Lexi, and joining me as always are Seth and Ethan, and we're debriefing pro-life outreach. Ethan, give us an outreach highlight for this week.
Okay, so I was at University of Cincinnati and having a conversation with a young lady, and she was having a hard time wrapping her mind around the difference between performing an abortion and removing the baby in an ectopic pregnancy.
Okay.
So, matter of intent, in an abortion, your intention is to kill the baby. In the ectopic pregnancy, you remove the baby, your intention is not to kill them. Unfortunately, they die because they can't survive outside the womb.
Right.
Right? We all get it. It wasn't connecting for her. So, I took a risky move, and I decided to try and use the violinist argument.
Now, that is
communicate
an argument for abortion.
An argument for abortion. To try and show her.
New guy has a new tactic.
Well, yes, we'll see, Seth. You got to verify this. To show her that intent matters. And what is killing this baby? Because in the violinist situation, you're connected to a violinist. His kidneys are failing. They're using your kidneys to recycle his blood. If you disconnect yourself, everybody agrees that you are not the person who's killing him. And it's okay for you to disconnect yourself. What's killing him? His kidney failure.
Yeah.
And so I tried to show her that if, however, you took a gun and shot the violinist, you would be murdering him and you would be guilty. In the same way, with the difference between the ectopic pregnancy and abortion, in the abortion, your intention is to kill the baby, like shooting the violinist in the head with a gun. Whereas with the ectopic pregnancy, it's unfortunate the baby dies, but the reason they die is not because you are killing them, but because they can't survive outside of the womb on their own. So it was a bit of a risky move. I think it sort of helped her understand it. I don't know.
Yeah, the light bulb's going off. That's pretty good, right?
So, what do you think about
clearly
that?
Clearly, in both situations, the violinist dies. If you unplug, he will die because of his kidney failure. Uh-huh. If you shoot him, he dies. But because you have actively killed him, that's really good. I'm curious, what's her response? Did she agree?
She
it worked?
It started to click for her.
Nice.
So,
it
was great.
That's all we need
Here
to
we
know.
Go.
It was very interesting. And afterwards, I was like, did I really just use the violinist argument to defend the pro-life position?
Yeah, nice. You can even do that.
Ethan. Good job, Ethan. Good job. That's a new tactic. If you want to try it, try it. I think it would be a little too advanced for my brain, but that's good for you.
It was definitely out there. So
that's good. I like it. Well done.
So we have yet another conversation with Titus, who is talking to a man during Irwin Outreach here in Columbus, Ohio, and he was giving us a few different reasons, or giving Titus a few different reasons for why the human beings inside the womb are not so valuable and that they should be able to be killed. So,
just to clarify for anyone, Urban Outreach means we're downtown. Where are we downtown?
Sorry.
Yeah.
We were in
just downtown
Columbus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so kind of near the Ohio State University, actually.
Wow, nicely said. Yeah.
Wow. Anyways, okay, so let's play the clip.
If we were to apply that consistently, then we'd all have unequal value. Do you see my problem with that?
In that moment, perhaps, but were they conscious before?
Yeah.
So then they have value then, and then they went into a state like sleeping. I wouldn't, walking to my roommates wouldn't pop in the head because, hey, you're not awake.
Yeah. What about people who are less awake, though? Because you have varying degrees. It's not either you have it or you don't, right?
That's the problem. It's so just like where, and then once you're like, I feel like, once you like bring it into the real world, that's a bad way of saying it. Once you, once you're like alive, like self-sustaining, that's a better word. Self-sustaining.
Okay.
Then that's when you have the ability to make choices for yourself, or at least think.
Okay.
My favorite part of that when he says, the real world, hang on, that's not a good way of putting it, right? That's so good.
Which I love, because so many people talk about how, oh, they're not in the world yet.
As if the womb is some alternate reality.
Yes,
right?
So I really appreciated that from him.
Yeah, that was good.
My question is to him and to all of us. So, yes, he even admitted, well, okay, actually, let me back up. For everybody to understand, they were talking about if somebody goes to sleep, they're not conscious about what's going on around them. They're not self-aware of what's happening around them. Mm-hmm. So does your value then change when you're sleeping versus when you're awake? Can we kill somebody because they're sleeping?
No. So he was asserting at some point that consciousness is, so you may have a living human, maybe, but yes, an unconscious being in there for the fetus is not a person.
Exactly. So if they are not conscious, then they are not human, or they're not valuable. They're not people. So he was, Titus was pointing out, well, what about when you're sleeping? You're not conscious of what's going on. So are you not valuable? He then was like, well, and then Titus pointed out that that's all on a spectrum. We're all at different levels, different stages of consciousness throughout the day, even, and then person to person. So then isn't value unequal? Is it, if that's what we're attributing value to, then aren't we all on a sliding scale there? And then that's when he moves on to say, well, if they're in the real world, not really real world, but if they're self-sustaining, then you're valuable. My question is, what is self-sustaining? What is the definition of that?
Right. Well, that was my question too. I wrote it down, self-sustaining. So self-sustaining in what way? Because I think, like, if I was dropped off in the middle of the Antarctic, I would not be very self-sustaining. I would die pretty quickly.
I don't know. Don't sell yourself
quickly.
Short.
Well,
I would want to die if I was dropped off in the Antarctic.
So, you know, obviously we're not completely, we're not like these self-contained little units that you just put us anywhere and we can survive.
Sure.
You know, there are, we can only survive in certain circumstances.
Yeah, right. This is interesting because I remember years ago, President Obama, he said, you know, talking about roads and stuff, you didn't build that. Do you guys remember this? He made some big speech like about, you go to work and stuff, you didn't build that road, you didn't do this. So like, he's essentially saying, you depend on someone, which at a rare moment, I definitely agreed with President Obama. Now, he was making statements beyond that I didn't agree with because of, that's a longer story. But anyhow, the point is that we all rely on someone or something. Not a single one of us this morning went and slaughtered our own whatever to eat our own breakfast and stuff, right? Every one of us depend on someone or something.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? Sustain oneself. That does require definition.
That's what I would like to push back on that and say, what does that actually mean to be self-sustaining? And especially, again, that's on a huge spectrum. Throughout your life, you're going to need more help than at in different times. So what does that actually mean to be self-sustaining? I think a lot of people think you have to be giving something to society to be valuable,
which is funny because that's not self-sustaining. That's production.
But sure. So I just don't know exactly what he means by that.
I don't think so either. I don't know that he knows, but I do think a lot of people will say this, and then this is when they point to viability, right, where the baby could survive outside the mother, but no preemie can just go home immediately.
No.
I mean, maybe not, no, I should say no preemie, but generally speaking, you need to go to the NICU or something because you need a lot of care, right? You're not self-sustaining in the sense of total independence, but that's often, I think, where they're thinking.
So if he is going with, well, you have to be viable, then you're still not really aware of what's going on when you're born. If you're born at 40 weeks even, okay, you're born, you're a little baby, you're not expressing things, you're not making decisions in life for yourself, right? You're pretty much just living. You are living, you are alive, you're on this world, you're on this earth, but you're not to this point of like self-sustaining. You're not making your own food, right?
And none of us are. So what does that mean? I mean, so, God is the only self-sustaining being, right? He's fully, he does not require anyone or anything else for his existence. All of us are contingent beings. We depend on others or other things.
So I think that almost goes to like a pride issue that we have, like, hey, I rely on myself. I think it's a very like American perspective.
Yes.
I have it all, you know, even if it's just making the money to go to the store to buy my own food, to have my own house, all this, like I'm doing that. I am not being a burden on society. I am making my life the way I want it to be. So anybody less than that, if you're just not putting in the work, or if you're a newborn child who doesn't have the capabilities of doing that, or a preborn child who doesn't have the capabilities of doing that, then you're less than because you're not working as hard as I am. So,
and there's something, I mean, we do want to try to, we are to be the kind of people who take responsibility, care about what we take care of. And so there is a good element of pride there, I think, where you are taking care, taking concern for what is under your purview. And for that reason, parents should take pride in raising their children and caring for them. So it kind of, it flips on its head in a weird way here.
Because I think if you have I think you're right, Seth. Like, I think if you have a proper understanding of your gratitude for being able to work, for being able to provide for people and to be a productive citizen or, you know, whatever. I don't really like using that term. But if you can be grateful for those things, you are going to help your community. You're going to love other people and you're going to sacrifice for other people. Yeah. So I think that would actually create a healthy view on abortion and you saying it's wrong because you understand the necessity for responsibility and to care for others. Mm-hmm. And you would understand that you're not self-sufficient 100% either. So I think this, again, we talk about this like every single week. I think this is a cultural norm in America. And so we have to break that idea, that thought of you have to have all these things. You have to be at this skill level to be valuable.
Right.
Titus did a good job at pointing out how we would have inequality there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't care if we are unequal now.
Yeah.
What do we do?
I love Titus's question. Do you see my problem with that?
Like, yeah.
You're creating inequality. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
It is good. He turns it back on him. And then what's odd, though, is, and I hear this a lot, so people will say, you need consciousness. Until you point out, well, the sleeping person is not conscious. Then they say, well, you had it, though. Now you kind of lost. I mean, you had it at one point, so we're going to attribute personhood to you. It's like it's the idea of like you kind of cross the threshold. So it doesn't matter. Really, consciousness doesn't matter. It matters that you get there. And once you cross the line, cross the threshold of consciousness, then now you're good to go. What do you guys think about that idea? Because I do hear that a lot. Like, it's not really consciousness. It's that you had it. Now you can lose it and still be a person.
Uh-huh.
As long as you cross the threshold of having it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, for me, I just ask people, okay, so you have someone who's in a coma, they had consciousness, and they may never recover that if they don't come out of their coma. So with this preborn person, why we know that they are going to have consciousness.
Yeah.
If, you know, everything goes correctly and they don't die, they are guaranteed to have consciousness at some point. So why then does that not count if we're going to count it for the person who had it at one point? Like, why is this only going one way? Why can't it go both ways if we're going to take your standard? Why?
Because you have to do like mental gymnastics to support abortion, really. Yeah. Because like the thing is you're making all of these rules. They pick a standard. Hey, you have to have consciousness.
Right.
But then they make all of these caveats to it because they recognize if they actually put that as a flat rule, they themselves wouldn't be protected.
So basically just like the English language, follow these rules except for all these exceptions.
Oh, right, yeah.
I was like, what do you mean by that?
You're right, though. I think it's Scott Klusendorf who says that not and never again is not the same as not yet. So someone who loses consciousness and will never get it back is not in the same state as someone who just can't exercise it yet.
Yes. Right.
We know a newborn girl, by virtue of being a human female, has the inherent natural capacity to sexually reproduce. She can't do it yet.
Yeah.
She needs time to develop, but it's already there as part of her root personhood, as part of her nature, being a human female. The same is true with the fetus. She has the inherent capacity to be self-aware. She can't exercise that yet, but it's already part of her nature. And so this idea is just not, she can't express it yet as irrelevant, because no one looks at a newborn girl and says, well, you can't reproduce yet. You're not really valuable. That's irrelevant to who she is as a human female. It's kind of silly.
Right.
And this whole idea like of the threshold, I think is, I always am baffled by anyway that consciousness can matter so much, your person flows from it till you have it, then, it doesn't matter anymore, right? It seems to me like they're kind of defaulting to our worldview saying, well, you're the kind of being who it could be conscious, and therefore, because of the kind of thing you are, you have value. Mm-hmm. But that's our point all the way through. We've always said you're the kind of thing you are, a human personhood, you're a human person. That's what matters, not your functions.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, I think we've completely left that, abandoned that in our society. So I like, though, how Titus was saying, do you have a problem? Do you see where I have a problem with that? Because it's almost asserting that there is a problem here.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you be able to understand? Do you see the problem?
Right.
Yes, because I feel like it's what he is saying is so crazy and outlandish that we should be firm and like, we're not the ones saying anything weird. It's you. And not in a rude way, obviously, but we're saying something that goes along with what really we as like Americans, obviously we have a Christian foundation in America, have thought for a very long time in seeing human beings as equal, I guess, you know, in different ways. But so it's really them that is saying something so crazy and bizarro, you know?
And why, as the Christian worldview erodes in America, why would we be surprised that equality starts to die? Because as you said, it doesn't come from nowhere. It came from, sprang from a worldview. I remember I saw an article in The Guardian years ago, which is not a conservative paper. I think Nick Spencer wrote it, but saying how our equality springs from the Christian worldview. And they were admitting this in that piece. And I think it's very important to recognize that. So as it erodes, so does equality.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's like even happened. Even in high school, you still heard people talking about equality. I think especially for whenever we were trying to, when other people were trying to push LGBT marriage or however they say that, I don't know, the same-sex marriage, quote unquote, they pushed equality. And really for the whole LGBTQ movement,
marriage equality,
we talked about equality, equality, equality. Once they got, well, I guess they're still pushing for a lot of things, but once that kind of died off, they don't really use the word equality anymore. Mm-hmm. It's equity and things like that.
Right.
Not really equality. You don't hear that word. You don't hear people talk about being created equal or anything. So I find that interesting. It's almost we're teaching people what equality is now.
Yeah, because when we say created equal, we say you are equal by inherent value of nature, whatever, the virtue of who you are.
Right.
You were created equal. Equity is not the same. You have to be made equitable. The situation has to be made equitable for you. They're saying we have to construct society, reorder it to build a utopia that will unfortunately never come.
Yeah.
Well, maybe fortunately, their world I do not want to live in. I don't think that's a utopia for me, okay?
All that, you know, utopia is a really sidebar. Utopia means no place. So it literally recognizes that there is no such thing as utopia.
Before,
yeah, that's why dystopia means like, what does dystopia mean?
This is
everywhere. No.
No, I should know this. I shouldn't have referenced it without knowing. But anyhow, it's like the opposite. So it's someplace. I'm not sure. Tell us what it is. Anyhow, I was intrigued by that. Utopia doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Showing my ignorance on the podcast.
Sorry, guys. That's embarrassing. Who cares? We all do it. We all say stuff we don't. Well, like, I don't know what it is. What does dis mean? Dis is like against, non-topia.
Maggie's looking up.
Thank you. That's like going to frustrate me if I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah. Right.
Anyways. So, again, this is the worldview of our day. Consciousness or something self-sustaining, that's what you need to be valuable. You have to be a productive citizen. And so some different things that we do in conversations is pull at the heartstrings as much as we can, not in a deceptive way or, you know, but because I think this is a lack of empathy towards people and a lack of almost lack of emotion and things. So how do we do that? Make it personal for people, Ethan?
By making it personal, apply their worldview to themselves and those they love.
Yeah, that's a good point.
When you don't, because it's so easy for us to create a worldview that's just completely disconnected from reality, because you live in a society where you don't have to put it into practice, or it's only talked about and not put into practice. But once you start to see the outworkings of your worldview, even in hypothetical scenarios and how it would affect those that you care about, I think people begin to maybe backtrack or reconsider some of their presuppositions of their worldview.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. I just found out what dystopia means,
all right,
y'all.
What does it mean?
Okay, well, dys means bad, difficult.
Okay, bad place.
Understandable. That
makes sense.
An imagined state or society in which there is great suffering or injustice, typically one that is totalitarian or post-apocalyptic. I just want to say Pop-Tart.
Post-Pop-Tart.
Yeah, so okay, that makes sense. That's what we would all think, right? So
Pop-Tarts belong in utopia, I would just say.
I would have to agree with that.
Brown sugar cinnamon one.
Oh, I like
we have this in the Justice Ride. Shout out. Come on, the Justice
gross.
Ride.
Yeah.
Not shout out. Plug for the Justice Ride.
Shout out to the Justice Ride. Yeah, no. Plug for the Justice Ride. Go.
So, but Ethan's point is really important, though, right? So, when we think about these things in hypotheticals, it's easy to agree. Yeah, sure. It's like fine to do all these kinds of things. When you think about someone you care about being treated a certain way, it changes. And that's a really good way to kind of like awaken someone's reality, awaken someone's moral intuitions inside of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think that's good. Where we left it off is just try to, as much as you can, awaken their emotions and that, or their moral grounding, and try to pull on their heartstrings a little bit. That's okay. That's a good thing to do, y'all. So please go leave us a 5-star review so that more people can find this podcast. That's all we have for this week. And as always, thank you for debriefing with us.